comes in 2 weeks in Knoxville. But for now, Big Blue Nation and the Wildcats can launch the celebration. Kentucky has taken down the number one team in the land, and they've done it with authority. 86-69 at Rupp Arena.
Welcome back. 104.5 The Zone, 717 here in the Wake Up Zone. That was the call from Tom Leach. Final seconds of Tennessee, Kentucky on Saturday night at Rupp Arena. Talk about that and more Tennessee. We bring in our friend Jimmy Hyams from Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville. Jimmy, what's up this morning?
Good morning, guys.
Well, 86-69, what was the final? Jimmy, did you ever think at any point, I certainly didn't, that that game would be 62-38 in the second half? That was just stunning to me.
No, I didn't. It was stunning to me as well. And I thought it'd be a close game. I picked Kentucky to win by three. Tennessee has rarely won in Rupp Arena. They've only beaten three Kentucky teams that were ranked at Kentucky in the history of the series. So I thought that Kentucky would get the win, but I did not think that Kentucky would win so decisively. I thought there were several things. One, Kentucky's physicality got to Tennessee. They just out-muscled Tennessee. The other thing was Tennessee was 1 out of 17 from three-point range out of its three best shooters. You can't have that. They also got out-rebounded. Tennessee did by 39-26. And the other key stat to me was that Tennessee shot 41% and Kentucky 55%. You put those three things together, you got yourself a rout.
For a Tennessee team that's been good in the physical department, how did that happen that Kentucky was able to sort of push them around like that?
I don't know. That's a good question. P.J. Washington was kind of pushing Tennessee around last year when he got hurt in a game that Tennessee won in Knoxville. But I don't know. And the thing that's confounding about that, now, Reed Travis is a transfer senior, and Washington is a sophomore. But a lot of those guys were freshmen. And how could a veteran team like that with Grant Williams and Schofield and those guys, Alexander, get pushed around like that? I was surprised. I was really surprised that physicality got to him. And also, Rick Barnes and Grant Williams both said that Tennessee was selfish. Grant Williams said it's the most selfish Tennessee has been in 3 years. And what would lead to that, I don't know. Did the pressure get to him? Did the moment, the Rupp Arena, the number one ranking, who knows? But that was not typical of Tennessee.
Yeah. But before this Tennessee team, it's always that line of thought that, hey, a loss in February might not necessarily be a bad thing for a good team. Do you kind of look at it this way for Rick Barnes now that he has kind of that card he can play? He can go back to this game whenever he needs to motivate these guys a little bit?
I think that's very possible. Certainly, John Calipari said after the win that loss to LSU was the best thing that happened to Kentucky. Well, maybe a Kentucky loss could be the best thing that happened to Tennessee. Tennessee's still capable of running the table, but a game like that, I think some of the warts surfaced about concerns that you have. I said going into the Kentucky game that two things had to happen for Tennessee to win. One, the big man had to stay in a foul trouble, and Kyle Alexander fouled out and didn't play but 18 minutes, so that didn't come true. And I thought Tennessee had to shoot 40% from three-point range, and they were awful from three-point range. But going forward, this team is still capable of running the table. Now, they have the toughest schedule of the three contenders. LSU has the easiest schedule, then it's Kentucky, then it's Tennessee as far as the strength of schedule. But I think this team can regroup. And I do remember this. So a year ago, Alabama blasted Tennessee. And boy, you wondered, what's going on with this team? Well, they rebounded from that and shared the SEC championship. So we'll see if Tennessee can rebound from this Kentucky blowout.
Our guest is Jimmy Hyams, Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville is where you can find Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy, I'm sure Tennessee get a rebound after this huge loss here quickly. But, man, I thought we saw P.J. Washington. It looks like he's the future SEC Player of the Year. What were your thoughts of him going head-to-head, not only against Grant Williams, but also Admiral and all the partners out there for UT?
Yeah, Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams, Alexander, none of them could deal with him. He played like the Player of the Year. I think in the last 10 games or so, he's averaged over 20 points a game and close to 10 rebounds a game. Prior to that, his scoring average was a little over 10 a game. Now, Grant Williams is still the favorite to win Player of the Year, but he certainly got outplayed. He only took four shots. Now, think about that. You got the reigning SEC Player of the Year, the leading scorer in the SEC, and he takes four shots, and two of them were from three-point range. They did not do a good job getting it inside. They settled too much for three-point shots. Their offense didn't look like they had a season low for points, 69, and a season low in assists with 11, which is very telling. But I still think Grant Williams would be the favorite for player of the year. But if Washington continues this streak and Williams slumps off a little bit, Washington could end up winning that thing.
How much do you expect of the Tennessee brass fan base, that's who I'm talking about, when they play Kentucky, start to chant of overrated immediately when the game starts?
Well, that's kind of, I heard, I think it was Jay Billis that said during that game, he said, you don't want to yell at the other team they're overrated.
Right.
You want to respect the fact that you beat the top team in the country. Why would you say they're overrated? But that's what fans do in an effort to try to, take a shot at the opposing team. But, during the course of that game, Tennessee did look overrated. I wouldn't argue with that one. But and Tennessee will fall to probably 3 or 4 in the next poll, possibly as low as 5.
Right.
But now Tennessee just didn't play at the level it needed to. And frankly, based on the way they didn't handle the physicality and played selfishly, they kind of got what they deserved.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He didn't even get any points off the bench from Bowden. He only had 3 points. I guess for me, you know, looking at the game, I was really shocked. But Bowden just getting 3 points off the bench, how surprising was that? But even shooting in general. But where did you see the selfish play? I know the coach said that. I know the players are saying the same thing. Where was the selfish play? Because Grant Williams is getting the ball down low?
That would be the key part of it. I'll be honest with you. Coming out of that game, I didn't come away thinking they were that selfish.
I didn't either.
I just thought they got beat up. But the big part of that would be Grant Williams not getting touches, only getting 4 shot attempts, only getting 2 shots from a 2-point range. They need to feed him the ball more inside. I think there was a little bit too much one-on-one. I thought Schofield was guilty of that, and he acknowledged it. Lamonte Turner, I thought there were several times he jacked up a 3 before they really got in their offense. Bowden was 0-for-7 from 3-point range. He did not play very well. One thing, too, and I mentioned some of the warts, one of the things that the concerns are about Tennessee going forward, and I've mentioned this for several weeks on our show here, I think they have a concern about interior depth. I think if Alexander and or Williams get in foul trouble, I don't really like what they bring off the bench. I don't think Fulkerson's played that well. I don't think Walker's played that well. I don't think they have much inside as far as depth to help out the two guys. And again, if Alexander and Williams get in foul trouble, I think Tennessee's in trouble.
All right, on the football note for me, I guess I'm seeing Derek Ansley will be making defensive play calls. I actually don't want to believe that, but is that true?
That's what Jeremy Pruitt said. That was the biggest surprise coming out of his press conference on Friday. I knew that Ansley would have some type of coordinator title, and I've been hearing he might be making $1 million a year, which he is going to be making. But Pruitt has relinquished the play calling duties, and somebody asked him, why would you do that? He says, because Derek Ansley's ready, and he said, because he can finish my sentences. So, in other words, he thinks like Pruitt thinks. And I think that's a little bit risky because he's never done it before. But that's what Pruitt has decided to do. I don't know if this is 100% Pruitt thinking, yeah, this is what I need to do. Maybe it was an influence from Philip Fulmer, the AD. Maybe it was an influence from Nick Saban, who felt like that might be the thing Pruitt needed to do. Maybe it was all on his own. But I was a little bit surprised that he decided he was going to give that up and be more of a CEO instead of being the defensive signal caller.
Jimmy, what about the reality, too, that this is a major demotion for Kevin Shearer?
Yeah, he's going from co-defensive coordinator to special teams. He'll continue to coach the inside linebackers. I don't know what he thought about that. I'm not sure that a guy that's used to coaching linebackers and being a co-defensive coordinator is thrilled about coaching kickers. I don't know. Maybe he likes kickers. Who knows? But I was surprised by that. There's been no reaction from him. And, of course, we don't have the ability to talk to the assistant coaches. But that, you've got to wonder about his mindset if he was happy with that move.
Well, and the other thing, too, was what Pruitt said, that he's definitely not going to let friendships, intervene when it comes to him making decisions about his football team.
Well, and he's right about that. You can't let that occur. Now, having said that, almost everybody on his staff, I think everybody on his staff, he has coached with at some place. It might have been Alabama. It might have been Florida State. It might have been Georgia. And he was with Anslick for quite a while. So there's a part of me that looks and says, and I don't necessarily think that it's friendship, but there's an acquaintanceship with every one of those guys. He's coached with them, and maybe he saw something in them that he felt like would make them able to coach at this level. So even though he said he wasn't going to let friendship get in the way, he looks like he's hired a lot of friends on his staff.
Jimmy Himes is our guest from Sports Radio WNML. We'll have more of Jimmy coming up in just a moment right here on 104.5 The Zone. Time for Mark to tell us about his friendship with the Lee Company.
That's right. Calling all commercial plumbers, welders, HVAC mechanics, electricians, and sheet metal workers. Join a team recognized 4 times as a top workplace in Middle Tennessee. That's right. Lee Company is known for more than 7 decades of expertise. If you're looking for the best, well, you found them. Whether you're interested in serving homeowners, provide service to commercial customers, or work on some of the most exciting construction projects in our region, Lee Company is the team to join. Whether you're a veteran looking for a place where your experience can make a difference, or a high school graduate looking to have a successful career in the trades, Lee Company is the place for you. Lee Company employees receive great benefits, including continuing education through Lee Company University. Visit leecompany.com/careers or call them today, 615-567-1000. There's no better day than today to join an award-winning team. leecompany.com/careers or call them at 615-567-1000. Lee Company, serving Middle Tennessee businesses and families since 1944. Imagine life better.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Zone at 7:34 on 104.5 The Zone. The Lee Company Hot Performer coming up not too far down the road. Let's continue with our friend Jimmy Himes from Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville. We talk Tennessee with Jimmy each Monday and Friday.
Yeah, Jimmy, and talking about the Tennessee staff, and that they're saying that right now the 2020 class could end up in the top 5. They're off to that good a start.
Yeah, they've got 5 commitments in 2020. They just picked up a defensive tackle named Dominic Bailey. He's out of Baltimore. They've got a really good quarterback commit that always helps your national ranking. And Harrison Bailey, he's out of Marietta, Georgia. They got a player from the state of Tennessee that had actually signed with Alabama a couple of years ago, didn't qualify, went junior college, the defensive end outside linebacker Jordan Davis. And they got a receiver named Antonio Barber. Those are the key ones in the class of 2020. Also, Mark, this is a really, really good year in state. And I was grading Tennessee by position the other day, but one of the things that gave them a close to a failing grade, a D-minus in, was their in-state recruiting. This past year, there were over 20 players that signed with Power 5 schools from the state of Tennessee, and Tennessee only got 4 out of those. So now, down the road, in 2 or 3 years, we'll find out if that was the right move to bypass on a lot of those kids. They bypassed on some and got out-recruited on some others. But I do think that this upcoming class should be a banner year for Tennessee in recruiting. And I think it has to be for Tennessee to get where it needs to go, and that is to be a contender in the East Division. In the last 10 or so years, they have contended for the East once. And that's the year that the Butch Jones beat both Florida and Georgia, but then turned around and lost to South Carolina and Vanderbilt. Other than that, Tennessee has not contended for an East title. They need to get back in contention for that.
Got another question about the staff makeup, and obviously Fulmer, goes a long way in terms of greenlighting what Jeremy Pruitt is going to pay his staff. And you know, obviously Fulmer is invested in Pruitt's success since he hired him. So, do you see what Fulmer has done as reasonable, or are you a little surprised that he's gone above and beyond to make sure his guy has the coaches that he wants?
Well, a little bit of both. I did not think that they would need to pay Derek Ansley over $1 million. Chaney came in. He comes in averaging $1.6 million, so you got $2 million coaches on your staff. There are not a whole lot of staffs out there in the country paying an offensive and defensive coordinator at least $1 million. So, but I do know that Fulmer's invested in trying to make sure it works. Now, what that does, in my opinion, it ups the ante. It ups the expectations. If you're paying a staff that kind of money, which is now well over $6 million, you better have a return on that investment. And you know, who knows? Maybe they will, but I'm not sure. I don't expect a huge turnaround this year. I expect it in year 3. But that's a lot of money to be pouring into a staff, and we'll see if they get the results from that staff. But I like Chaney a lot. I just think that Derek Ansley's unproven. He may end up being a great defensive coordinator, but he hasn't proven that at any place yet because he hasn't been a defensive coordinator.
As far as the spotlight on an assistant coach, I would imagine Will Friend, the offensive line coach, is going to be experiencing that. In terms of position group, Jimmy, I don't know of a more critical area, for Tennessee in terms of who they've got coming in and the need to really coach those kids up.
I agree with that. And there's a pretty chance Tennessee will start two true freshmen on the offensive line, Wanya Morris and Jarnell Wright. And they have some other pieces that could end up being pretty good players. I don't know if Trey Smith is coming back. If I had to bet right now, I'd say the chances are less than 50-50 that he returns from the blood clots. But Brandon Kennedy at center helps you. I think moving Ryan Johnson from center to guard. They like Jerome Carvin, Jameer Johnson. They got a couple other pieces that they like. Marcus Tatum at tackle, a decent player. But I think these freshmen are going to have to come in and play. And for any offense to work, unless you're running an option can mask a bad offensive line. And Tennessee did mask that at times with Josh Dobbs and his own read and his ability to run and the running backs that they had in Hurd and Kamara. But they don't have that. You run a pro set, you can't hide a bad offensive line. So I agree with you. I think that they're going to have to really develop and play well. I do think if those two freshmen can come in and play at anywhere near the level that Trey Smith did as a true freshman, this could be a much improved offensive line.
Jimmy, to finish up, the Lady Vols won at Missouri yesterday. That was a nice win for Holly Warlick's team against the team they came into Knoxville and beat them. And oh, there's some bad feelings after that game. So that had to be a doubly sweet for UT to go to Columbia and get that victory.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I thought Missouri would beat them at home. Missouri hadn't lost at home in a conference game in over a year. And so Tennessee went out there and did a nice job. They played really good defense. They got just enough scoring from Avina Westbrook primarily. They made a couple of silly plays down the stretch, which is like, what in the world? How in the world did you do that? But they managed to get out with a win. They've now won five of the last six. And going into that game, Charlie Cream, who's the bracketology for women's basketball, he had them in the 9 seed going into the Missouri game. That win should propel them even higher and should put them in much better shape to make the NCAA tournament. They're the only program on the women's side that's made all NCAA tournaments, and that takes back to 1982.
With a solid finish, Jimmy, you got to feel like they are on pretty good ground as far as just getting into the tournament. Do you feel like above 500 in the SEC will get the job done?
I do. I absolutely feel above 500. And the key, they got there's a tough three-game stretch here. And I felt like they had to win at least one of those, if not two. And it started with Missouri. So I think that Missouri win was big in that regard. They've also got Texas A&M coming up, which is a good team. They got South Carolina coming up. Both of those teams would be favored to beat the Lady Vols. That's why I think that Missouri win was so big. You can even afford to lose to A&M and South Carolina and still have a chance to get in the tournament, but you could not lose three in a row. And we'll see. Maybe that win will also give them the confidence against A&M and South Carolina to perhaps win one of those two.
I know the bracketology things are what they are, but how much do you think the loss to Kentucky hurts the men's team in terms of being solid for a number one seed?
What was interesting was that I saw an interview with Lenardi, and he said before the game, now before the one-sided loss, that if Tennessee lost, they would only drop from the number two, the second number one seed to the third number one seed. Now, that's pretty strong. I wasn't sure I bought into that, but that's what he said, and he's been pretty good at this through the years. I still think Tennessee can be a number one seed. Now, they can't afford to stumble too much here down the stretch, but other teams will also lose. I don't think everybody else that's vying for a one seed is going to win out. But I thought that loss might drop them to a two seed, but Lenardi said no, it would only drop them one spot in the pecking order of one seed.
Jimmy, thanks as always. We'll talk to you Friday.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
From Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville, each Monday and Friday, we have Jimmy Hyams with us here on the Wake Up Zone. Coming up in a moment, going to have our Lee Coppedy Hot Performer, also Tim Tebow, and what he told Kyler Murray about playing both sports. More Wake Up Zone right after this. Stay tuned. We'll continue on 104.5 The Zone. First, Mark, and a word about Wilson County Chevrolet Buick GMC.
That's right. Our good friend Mitchell Bone, I know, is all pumped up about having those 2019s on site. That's right. You'll get great values anywhere you go in terms of Wilson County Chevrolet, Buick, and GMC, any brand. And Wilson County Chevrolet also has fantastic savings on all remaining 2018 models in stock. They will not be beat on price. And you'll love buying a car from Wilson County Chevrolet because they treat customers like family. They have a huge selection, as I mentioned, of all the 2019 model cars and trucks. So come test drive a new 2019 car or truck. You'll be glad you did. And as soon as you walk on the premises, be sure to ask for your Mitchell discount. And on top of that, Wilson County Chevrolet, Buick, and GMC has an award-winning service department that's open on Saturdays. They want to return the car to you in the shape when you first drove it off the lot, and they have the cutting-edge technology to do it. And, of course, Wilson County Motors, a Bone family tradition since 1927. Great people, great deals, fantastic service in nearby Lebanon.